brother.
God. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Solid. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work, so I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
Incredibly humble. You guys are friends of mine. What does that mean? I eat difficult conversations for breakfast.
Soda breakfast.
Go get them, son. You know, show us what you can do.
No.
That's all. I'm done.
Okay.
It's real. It's raw. At times, it's real raw.
This is your Are the New England Patriots Bad for the National Football League Leader Fan Radio Network.
What does that mean?
I don't know. KFAN. .com. 2 minutes, 2 seconds past 3 o'clock Central Daylight Saving Time. Welcome back. Bumper to Bumper Show starts right now. It is a 3 hour tour today. Yeah, it's that time of year. Gilligan's Island is back. It's Thursday, and during the National Football League season, we basically go to that truncated Thursday schedules. That means we got to wedge a lot more in. We basically have 3.5 hours of material we have to somehow wedge into a three-hour time slot. We'll do our damnedest to get it all done. The Metropolitan Ford guest lineup is, I think, exemplary today. It'll include an in-studio visit with writer extraordinaire Kyle Mills, who is in town. In fact, we'll talk about a couple of bookstore appearances that he indeed will have. And we'll talk about, certainly the motion picture, American Assassin, which he has been lucky enough to see. I have been lucky enough to see. And we'll also talk about the release Tuesday of the latest Vince Flynn book as penned by Kyle Mills, Enemy of the State. That came out on Tuesday. I'm assuming it's doing well. I was at Barnes & Noble today. Hardcover copies abundant everywhere. Lots of good displays. If they give you the good display, that means they expect really, really good results. You don't get those displays for nothing. So he joins at 3:30, we think. He thinks 3:15, so there's some confusion in the time. Later this hour in studio with Kyle Mills, Dr. Dan's inbox. He's not a guest, but we'll get to the inbox, and Guardsy will open it up at 4:30 today. And the return of Robert Smith to the Bumper to Bumper program, that is scheduled for 5:15. So a busy day, and I think a good day from a guest standpoint and a bit standpoint as well. I mentioned off the top of the program that we are indeed are the New England Patriots bad for the National Football League leader. It seems to be the obvious toss-up question as we embark upon, yes, another National Football League season. It is now upon us. The Patriots will open tonight against the Kansas City Chiefs in a game that you can hear on our flagship FM 100.3, The Fan. Oh, if Kansas City's still good. They're viewed as certainly relevant and competitive. We know what just how good the New England Patriots have indeed been. And yet, we find ourselves on this program in a very unusual position in that we are not... That question about are they bad for the league? I don't think they are bad for the National Football League. I think the New England Patriots are good for the National Football League. Beyond that, I don't think either one of us has felt necessarily obligated to despise the New England Patriots to quite the degree that others have. In fact, I think you can easily make the argument that the New England Patriots and the way they go about their business should be of supreme fascination to hardcore football fans. They don't draft high each year, right? I mean, when you've been as good as they've been for as long as they have been good, and how good? Well, over the last 16 seasons, 14 division titles, 7 AFC titles, championships, and 5 Lombardi trophies. That's awfully good. So by definition, unless you're making deals where you're adding a bunch of draft choices, which they don't do, haven't done a lot of, then you're picking towards the bottom of the first round almost every year. They do it without, beyond Brady, and I guess you could say beyond Gronk, how many New England Patriots can you even name? Or even if you can name them, how many of those you can name would you say they're great?
And you name them for like 3 years.
Right.
Besides Brady.
Abundantly talented. You say, wow. I mean, look, murderer's row. No. And yet they continue to excel. Now, we get the asterisk. We've talked about the asterisk. How much have they cheated? Have we only gotten half of what they've really done to cheat?
Probably more there.
And there may be more there. And that's fair. That needs to be put into the conversation. But if you win at that high a level that often, you got to have something else going for you. And to me, and I know there's sports fans out there who just believe generally in the, I'm just tired of the same names. I'm tired of Brady. I'm tired of the same people. I just want something different. I guess I understand that. But I find them utterly fascinating because I'm always curious to know, well, how are they going to do it this year? What are they? How is Karpov going to move the chess pieces around this year? Because let's be honest, over the course of those 16 years, they've won it a lot of different ways.
Yes.
Now you could say Brady is the unifying force, but
he is.
They've won it with some really good defenses. Then they've won it with some okay defenses and really good offenses. They have won it with, as I said, moving a lot of weird pieces around from a personnel standpoint where they get the best out of somebody for a year and a half and then they dump them and then they go get somebody else who maybe has had a minute or two in the league, but they figure, they deem that person, that player can be helpful to them and contribute to what they want to do. And even Brady himself, to me, no matter what you think of his, you know what, you know, the image, whether the reality of the human being matches the image. The fact of the matter is, to continue to excel at his age in the National Football League is also quite remarkable. It's pretty much unprecedented, I think. And, I mean, look, we didn't win it. They didn't win it the year Moss had his big season with them, right?
No, they lost to the Giants.
They lost to the Giants. That was the miracle catch.
Yep.
They probably should have won it that year.
Randy Moss caught the should-be go-ahead winning touchdown pass.
Correct. But my point is that year, even though they didn't win at all, they were very good, and they got within a play or two of winning it, and they were a deep threat team. Then 4 years later, they morph into the super two tight end set team. And that again goes back to the brilliance of the head coach. And we've talked a little bit about this before, that another part of Belichick's brilliance, I think, is it's not just how they change from year to year. It's how they change from week to week.
Correct.
They do not believe in... See, here's another reason you should love them. The people who say the league is too staid and they're too predictable and you always know what teams are going to do each week and they feel like, well, these are our strengths and we're sticking to them. Belichick and the Patriots are the antidote to that. They are the team that says, 1 week we might throw 75 times and run twice. We don't care about what the rules are on that. And the next week, we might reverse it. Well, we might not reverse it, but we might throw 20 times and run 54 times. It depends on what we think we got going in a given game against a given opponent. That should be what the folks who are clamoring for something different gravitate towards and love. And I'll say, even if you hate the Patriots, they're good for football. Because every sport, as we've talked about ad nauseum, needs the super team, I think, whether you're going to celebrate their success or root for their ultimate doom and destruction and failure. You know, they become big. They become sort of the sun around which all the planets revolve in the National Football League to a certain extent. What you don't want is just, I'm bored with them and I'm just not interested in them. No, if you hate them, there's emotion attached to hate, and that's intensity, and that is good for the National Football mm-hmm. League. So even if you root against them every week and say you can't stand them, you're giving them the sort of attention that indicates that they are good for the National Football League.
How much more satisfying was it for Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning and the Colts to get by them to go win a Super Bowl? And
absolutely.
Even Peyton Manning, getting by Brady one more time when the Broncos beat them a couple of years ago. They haven't won every single year.
No.
As dominant as they've been.
Right.
And particularly in the AFC, whether it was the Colts or whether it was the Broncos or when the Ravens went, you know, the Ravens have kind of had their number over the years in Foxborough, by the way. But when they won to go, I think it was a title game, I don't remember, but when they beat the Patriots on their way to the Super Bowl, that was an epic game as well. So, like, they're absolutely good for them. Even if you don't like them, they're good. It's good to have villains. It's good to have the Yankees. It's good to have, for me, Hopkins basketball.
Absolutely.
It's good to have the people that you hate and love to see.
Did you mention Duke?
Down. Haven't mentioned Duke, but that's another great example.
Yeah.
So it's not, because they don't win every year. As much as it feels like they do,
right.
They don't. And it's even that much richer, to use a word you like to use a lot. It's that much more richer. The story's much fuller when you can knock off that team.
During the Brady era, their average draft pick is number 26 in the first round. Now, again, if you like free agency, they make good, sensible free agent moves. They're not always the splashiest, but every year they're in it. They're exchanging one asset that they think is kind of either used up or they don't want to pay them big money for another. They occasionally use trades. They identify players that they think fit what they're doing, and they don't give a damn what other teams think about those players or whether there are fans scratching their heads and saying, why are you so interested in those players? They really do march to the beat of their own drummer. I mean, they do. So hate them all you want, but you can't ignore them. And I'm aroused by excellence. Okay, maybe they've, as I said, some of that excellence has been assisted by a little bit of cheating. But do people in their right mind think that the key to this team's, that franchise's success being sustained as long as it is cheating? Maybe people do. I'm not so sure that there's real solid evidence of exactly that. So we owed the Patriots early. They're back in action tonight. They kick off the National Football League season. There's an old saying, what does it go? Something like, if you love someone, set them free.
Yes.
And if they don't come back to you, they weren't really yours in the first place. We'll look up the exact wording,
mm-hmm.
but it applies to what we got to get into this next segment and is directly related.
Well, Kyle Mills is here. What do you want me to do with him?
I can mention quickly what I'm talking about here, and then we can move into the Kyle Mills segment as well. It can be kind of a combo platter segment, but this is too important from a show standpoint to ignore because it's almost of the breaking news variety related to the Bumper to Bumper show. We'll explain that next.
Still September.
Guardsy, the quintessential New England Patriots have been beneficiaries of a terrible division comeback has been offered.
That's fair.
It's fair, but so were the San Francisco 49ers. How in the Montana, I mean, how long were the 49ers rulers of a bad division? It's at some point, if you even if you grant the point, if you take as full advantage of the Patriots more recently and the 49ers then did of their, you want to say, their lucky circumstance and make long postseason runs, who cares? To me it becomes irrelevant. To me, if it was all luck on the basis of being in bad division, they would have been exposed much earlier in the playoffs, far more often than they indeed were. So go ahead. I mean, we talked about it after Super Bowl 51. I have never observed less enthusiasm about an historic comeback in any sport ever than was the case after the Patriots came from behind to knock off the Falcons. I mean, it goes back to that resentment as opposed to, do you realize all the things that had to happen for this to take place? And Atlanta was complicit. I understand that. They contributed. But the greatest comeback ever, there are a lot of people out there who just don't even want to acknowledge it.
Which, as it was happening, I mean, I was watching it while holding my, I think at that point, 2-month-old.
Yes.
Trying not to wake him up, yet right. Like exclaiming
yeah.
every time something happened. It was one of the most amazing things to watch in real
remarkable.
Time. You just watched it. Yeah, so
I watched it for the second time the other day on the NFL Network. I was mesmerized by it. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. I never watch a
Did
game
Did you DVR
twice.
It to make sure so you can now go and watch it whenever you want?
I should have done the 11-on-11 deal. No, the 20. No,
all 22.
All 22 is what they call it. By the way, the saying, I had it in a computer. Let me see if I can find it again because I got to get it right. If you love someone, set them free. If they come back, they're yours. If they don't, they never were. It's one of those cheesy poster quotes you get, and it fits today because it appears that Carl Gerbschmidt, our resident Packer fan, not to mention contributor to the prediction segment every Friday during the season, was attempting to leave us, and we didn't make a big deal of it, right, when he decides to appear on the Paul Allen Project, and
no.
apparently this morning
we're
on the Power Trip Morning Show.
Yeah.
And my guess philosophy on it was exactly like this. I mean, we'll set Gerbschmidt free, and if he doesn't come back to us, he really wasn't ours in the first place. Guess what? He's coming back. My sources say he's coming back tomorrow night because the conversation with the project was just a mess, and the conversation with the Power Trip Morning Show was beyond embarrassing to him. He just couldn't handle it. So I think we got him. Is that your understanding as well?
I haven't confirmed it with him, but...
But I got a good feeling, because neither interview went the way he had dreamt it might.
Yeah, well, and I just don't think there was ever... There was never any threat, or there was never any real legal leg I thought he had to stand on to not be on our show. Like, this whole thing has kind of come out of the blue
That's
for
true.
Me this week. So I don't know if we're going to be able to resolve it tomorrow. I don't know if he is going to call in. I don't know any of that, but he's supposed to be on. We're not sure about Dan from Woodbury.
But, it seems like those negotiations still might be tense.
And I'm worried because I'm going to be on my way to Oregon tomorrow.
That's
and
true.
I hate to leave. You know, I hate to leave a house out of order. You know what I mean? I like to try to have things at least a little buttoned up for when I leave town. And it seems like the house, at least in terms of the pick segment, is a little out of order tomorrow.
Hey, one other thing. You know, the notion of certain teams having the advantage of playing in mediocre to okay to not very good divisions. How'd that work out for the Vikings in winning Super Bowls? Weren't there a couple of mediocre divisions we might have played in over the years?
I'll take your word for it.
I think.
I mean, now the division's really tough. The Packers are in it.
Occasionally, there were a couple of opportunities there. So it's just nonsense. If it's envy and jealousy that you're overcome by, just admit to it. Okay, just own up to it. I think, or say you don't like certain personalities, or Belichick bothers you, or the cheating bothers you, which apparently there was indeed some. Let's get caught up, and when we indeed return, we will chat with Kyle Mills, who is in town for a couple of appearances. We'll get to his bookstore appearances when we return. Enemy of the State, the newest Mitch Rapp book, is out. It was officially, I believe, released or dropped, as they say in the business, on Tuesday. We'll talk to him about that. We'll talk to him about the premiere of American Assassin as well. Lots to get to with the guy who is considered or who has continued the Vince Flynn, Mitch Rapp tradition. He is in studio with us next here in The Fan. Well, it's a big week for the Mitch Rapp franchise, one might say. The new motion picture, American Assassin, is getting red carpet treatment various locations around the country, including the Twin Cities tomorrow night. And I think the wide release is a week from Friday. I've been talking about it since I saw it. And, of course, the latest Mitch Rapp novel by Kyle Mills came out on Tuesday. Enemy of the State. Mr. Mills, kind enough to join us in studio today as he prepares for a couple of bookstore appearances in the area. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
You, I know you've seen the film as well, and you, as well as I, and I think a lot of people who've been lucky enough to go to early screenings, quite encouraged by what they saw. What struck you?
I think that they captured the characters, and that was fundamentally what was important. Dylan was fantastic. He's exactly what I pictured Mitch Rapp to be at that age. And Michael Keaton, you know, what can you say about the guy? He's always great.
The Kyle's appearances, by the way, will include a stop at Once Upon a Crime this evening at 7 o'clock. That, of course, is on West 26th Street in Minneapolis. Very famous, highly esteemed bookstore. And then you'll be in Hudson tomorrow night at 7, Chapter 2 Books in Hudson, Wisconsin, across to the other side of the other side of the border. And then from here you go on quite a book tour, I assume, right? It starts here and it goes for a while.
Heading down to Florida, which should be fun.
That should be a lot of fun next, that's for sure. How do they pick the spots? Do you know how that works?
Well, that one was I think a place where they kind of discovered with computers that they sell a lot of Vince's books and that there are a lot of huge fans down there, which is kind of fun. I've never been down there before.
Is that right? Interesting. Yeah. Demographic, I mean, in terms of, not demographics, but I guess in terms of what the sales show, where are the most heavily concentrated Vince Flynn fans? Do you have that down to a science? I assume there's analytics for everything in sports. I assume there's plenty of book analytics, too.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I don't follow that too much. I focus on writing the books. Probably here would be the number one place. Yeah, the Twin Cities.
You'd like to think, for sure. Enemy of the State is, as I said, came out on Tuesday. And this is, I believe, your third.
Yep.
And we'll talk a little about the new deal in which you're going to do, it sounds like, several more. But I got to believe that I've heard you talk about this already, and I certainly felt it reading the book, that you're getting more and more comfortable in your own skin, so to speak, in terms of making that transition from trying to be Vince, which is pretty hard to do, but which you kind of, I think, tried to do a little bit in the first book, to where you are now, which is, okay, I get the parameters, but I'm writing these things, and so I'm more and more comfortable with being me.
Right. Yeah, the first one I went into saying flat out that I wanted to create a forgery. And, he had written three pages, and I put them in the book, and I didn't want anybody to know which three pages those were. So, but that's not really sustainable. And it's also, the world has changed. You know, and thrillers have to keep up. They have to feel, ripped from the headlines, to use a common phrase. And so the books have to evolve to meet the challenges of the world.
What's this one about?
This one's about Saudi Arabia and the idea that they were more involved in 9/11 than we at first thought, and that the government, the U.S. government and the Saudi government, made a deal to cover that up. And we all know about the redacted pages and all these things. So it's not terribly far-fetched.
No.
And we have a strategic interest in maintaining our relationship with them. So when they stop living up to their agreements, who are you going to call? Mitch Rapp.
And you're already working on the next one?
I am, yeah.
I've read a couple things where you make that one sound as if it's an even more global threat. How would you distinguish the threat in that one without giving too much away from what's in this one?
Well, the next one's going to be a little more geopolitical.
Okay.
It's going to involve Russia and some large, the Baltics and all this, and some more large chessboard type of story.
You've talked about this too. You have the beauty of this franchise is you do have lots of characters to go back to weave back into these stories if you so choose, right? And that is a great advantage for I would think any writer.
Yeah, I love all the characters in these books, and it was funny because Vince would create these terrific characters, and then they'd sort of, I feel like he just got bored with them, and they'd disappear, and everybody'd go, but what happened to, you know, Greta or Donatella? And now I'm getting to explore that and bring back some of those characters that I always wondered what happened to them.
The is this the first book where you felt like the survivor jitters are gone, or even starting to feel that last book, or how has this process been for you?
Yeah, I think the last book I felt it a little bit. I went a little farther away from staying very strictly to what Vince had done, and the idea was to see how fans reacted to it, and if they reacted badly, I was just going to go back to trying to do forgeries. But everybody liked it, so and everybody appreciated the fact that the world moves on, and frankly, Mitch Rapp moves on. His personality has evolved, and that's why he always felt like such a real character.
And these fans are very proprietary of Mitch and the other characters, are they not?
It's amazing. I did something that I had not thought about for a second when I did it, and Mitch is going in, he has long hair, and he's going into an op, and he tied it back to keep it out of his face. You cannot believe how much mail I got about that. It was apparently his first ponytail, which, thinking about it, I know that's true, but I hadn't thought about it at the time.
Were there people bitter about that very move?
I think they were just making fun of me. They called it a man bun.
Ah, yes, right. They weren't convinced that Vince would have opted to choose that particular look.
No, but having been formerly had long hair, I can tell you it gets in your face.
Very, very good. Good point. In the time you've been doing this, when did you start this process? How many years has it been now?
Oh, 3.5.
Okay. Over the course of that time, as you said, you've gotten a great deal of support, I think, right, from the fans and so forth. What's some of the favorite stuff that you've gotten from people? How much feedback do you get? How much of it do you pay attention to? Do you actually read and even respond to?
Oh, I respond to all my mail, but it's actually really interesting. You get some of these people that have read these books probably more times than I have, and they're really into the character and have great observations on things you've maybe done wrong or things you should think about, and everything from big picture stuff to why would he react this way when he reacted to a similar thing in a past book, to little things like. I wrote that he had given somebody a 100-pound note once, and there are none. Which is funny. I used to live in England. I just thought I was too poor to have ever seen
it. Kyle Mills, our in-studio guest. I know there's been some discussion about maybe doing more prequel work. Is that in the... Because there was a new deal just announced, right? Just within the last few months of three more books. So how specific do those discussions get about where those books fit in to the chronology?
We don't talk about it at all.
At all.
So this book, the book I'm working on now, I've floated the prequel thing before because I Killshot just sort of stopped. And it was clear that there was supposed to be another book.
Sure.
And a conclusion to that story. And I've always wanted to see where it went. So I've pitched that before and didn't get a lot of traction. So maybe with the movie coming out with Dylan being the young Mitch Rapp, there'll be more interest in going back.
Did you have any, as they're going through the process of producing this movie and putting it together, were you involved in that at all? Were you consulted on, or where were you in that whole process?
No, not at all.
Outside looking in.
Yeah, that's Vince's baby. So, then once you give it to the studio, it's very much theirs.
Yeah, as Vince told us more than once, you have to be prepared for that. Because I got a lot of questions, as you, I'm sure, have about, well, I'm not sure about Dylan. You buy him as Mitch, and he's young. And it's like, well, again, we're back to, I think people always view Mitch in terms of the seasoned, mature Mitch, that was always the guy, and that's really not the case through the books as well. And they kind of forget that part of it, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, this was Mitch right out of boot camp, basically, and kind of a little bit of a screw-up. He did not follow orders well. I think I wrote in a later book when he was remembering it as he went back, he shot people 4 times when one bullet would have sufficed. And so it's the younger and also much more passionate Well, I'm passionate in a different way because, you know, his girlfriend had just died at this point, just been killed by terrorists.
The anything else? Because we agree on the movie that it nails sort of the essence of it. Was there anything else that surprised you about it or that impressed you about what they were able to do? Because I thought the production values were excellent, which is always a question. Although I guess once it became clear this is going to be a pretty big money picture, you're pretty much set there. But to me, that's also added to the authenticity of it. Doesn't look to me, I don't know how much it was spent on it, but it didn't look to me like it was done on the cheap.
No, definitely not on the cheap. The thing I liked about it is, I mean, it has a huge scene at the end that is really impressive in a grand sort of modern movie kind of way. But what I like about it best is it's gritty. You know, I mean, the fight scenes look really brutal and real, and they're not high tech, you know. That's not Mitch. I love watching the Mission Impossible movies, but I can't picture Mitch putting suction cups on his hands and climbing up a building. I mean, it's just not him. And so this was kind of gritty and violent, and it just felt very much like the books.
Is it, in your experience and with your knowledge of the book business and maybe of the movie business, how much does one help the other? In other words, if this movie takes off and becomes a big hit, which I don't know why it wouldn't, is it a very synergistic effect historically, traditionally? I mean, how much does one help the other, or vice versa even?
It'll be interesting to see. Probably American Assassin sales are going to take off. I mean, they've got a beautiful movie cover on it and everything now, and I'm not sure how it'll affect Enemy of the State, hopefully positively.
Maybe you've told me this before, forgive me if I have and I've forgotten. Have you written anything for motion pictures? Have you done movie scripts?
No.
Is it anything that's ever interested you, or does it just seem like such a completely different kind of work and occupation that it wouldn't?
It would be an interesting challenge, maybe, but I would not say that I have sought going to L.A. and working in the movie business. I am not a collaborative writer, which is sort of funny, I guess, since I've taken over for Vince, but I've never done a collaboration, and I'm not sure that it would work for me. I tend to sit in my basement by myself, and that works pretty well.
Very effectively for you. As you've told us before, you're not a procrastinating writer. You got a schedule, and you stick to it, correct? Or else you're doomed.
No, yeah, absolutely. I have almost a day-to-day schedule as to what I need to get done.
I as a guy who used to work in newspapers and love reading and books and novels and so forth, there's a part of me, though, that would be fascinated to find out how the really good script writers, screenwriters do it, how they're able to distill a story that from a book in which obviously it's got to be a lot more involved and you can't possibly cover all of it and kind of bring it effectively to the screen. Because I marvel at people who can do that, because it's an art, obviously, that some have and some don't, but I can't even begin to understand it. It just seems like it's beyond me.
It's sort of the opposite of what I do. I create things and they cut them.
Right.
So, yeah, it would be incredibly hard, I think, particularly if the author tried to do it, because they'd think, well, I really liked that part, and you wouldn't want to cut anything.
You almost have to be outside looking in, a little bit more detached. You're absolutely right about that. Speaking of the books, what's your approach or philosophy when it comes to length of the book? I mean, is it, okay, I've got a certain sort of length I've kind of stuck to, because every once in a while you'll have writers who are doing really well in a series and suddenly it'll be, you know what, now let's make it 600 pages instead of 400. Let's make it really fat because let's go after it. Is that something that you think about or that matters, or is that a dangerous proposition, you think?
No, for me, no. I mean, obviously there's an idea of what a full-length novel is. It's kind of defined as 110,000 words. And I don't give it any thought. I come up with the story, and for some reason it always comes out around 110,000 words.
Really?
Yeah, I did 130 once, and it seemed incredibly long. But I can't imagine. You know, and it's funny because Vince was sort of the opposite. I mean, he wrote some really long books and some fairly short books. But for me, it always comes out right in the middle.
That's interesting. Emailer Dwayne, three-man cage match, Mitch Rapp, Scott Horvath, or Jack Reacher, who wins and why?
Oh, come on. That's not even close.
Not even a contest?
Not even a contest.
You know, it's interesting because Cruise played Reacher, right? Or has played Reacher. Has there been one
twice.
Movie? Or,
no.
Is it two times now?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And You know, like a lot of people, when there was speculation about who's going to play Mitch and how you're going to fit all these things in, there's a tendency, I think, automatically for people to want an established, huge name for all the obvious reasons. And yet, I think this feels right, because I don't know. I never bought Cruz in that role, as accomplished as Tom Cruise has been, that if you get the right, it's like nobody knew who Dylan is, but not as huge a name, obviously. I actually think that ends up being the better way to go, especially if it's going to be the start of a franchise, don't you think?
Yeah, I couldn't think of an established actor that people ask me that all the time, and I could, for the life of me, I couldn't think of one. And when they named him, I honestly have to admit, I didn't know who he was, and got the Maze Runner and thought, yeah. You know, the thing with Mitch is that he's a physical type, and it's important that he be that physical type. So his history in athletics, and also his ability to blend in the Middle East. So, you know, you get a big blonde guy, you know, 250-pound blonde guy, and it just doesn't work. So I think they did an amazing job picking him.
And I think another smart thing about the movie is the length of the film, which I think is under two. I think it's like in an hour 50, maybe an hour 50.
Is it?
And
yeah, I didn't know.
I thought so.
Seems short.
And you know, because a lot of movies these days, wide release movies, are cheating a little bit. That old two-hour rule, they're going to 225 or 235. And, you know, you can argue if it's a good enough movie, it doesn't matter. But I think the way people are wired today, you get in under the two-hour mark, and it's a movie that moves, obviously, from start to finish. Very effectively. Again, tonight, Once Upon a Crime, that's where Kyle Mills will be in Minneapolis to talk about the book. And then tomorrow in Hudson, Wisconsin, Chapter 2 books, tomorrow night at 7. So the plan is you're going to attend the early part of the red carpet premiere here of the movie, and then you're going to kind of sneak off to talk about the book. So do you do... I know we've talked about this before, but do you just take questions? Do you do a reading? Do you try to do a 5-minute comic act? Or what is your approach these days when it comes to meeting these audiences who are so eager to chat with you?
I'm mixing it up this a little bit. I won't be doing this tonight, but I actually put together a bit of a slideshow.
Really?
Yeah. So it's places I've been to research, and my father was an FBI agent.
Yeah, as we talked about.
Knew a lot of spec ops guys and some just sort of historical photos of that I churned up. And just talk about the process of how you research these things, you know, where the ideas come from, and where all the settings and characters come from.
How much of what is going on in the world, geopolitically speaking, plays into, how much... When you talk about doing research and giving yourself maybe some ideas to bounce off of, how much of that, how important is that in your process, I guess?
It's really critical. I mean, I spend all day with the news feeds while I'm working, probably just like being on the radio. And those things are constantly being built into the book, and it happens as you're writing. So you're still changing things based on current events right up to the day you deliver.
Have you given any thought to how Mitch Rapp would get along with Donald Trump?
Well, I know that Vince wrote something about Donald Trump in one of his books, and it was...
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was in Consent to Kill, and he had told his wife that she had control issues, and she said something to the effect of, "You telling me that I have control issues is like Donald Trump telling somebody they have a big ego." So that's what we know.
That's as much as we know at this point. So three new books, and they basically you're on a one a year schedule. Is that the way it's going to work?
Yep, should work that way, unless something horrible happens.
Well, yeah, that's the time frame that we will be on, and then after that, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's been a lot of fun writing these books and meeting the fans and. Kind of getting to see Vince's world and meet his family and his friends.
Really enjoyed it. Emailer Jonathan, can you ask Kyle if he reads and enjoys the John Wells novels written by Alex Berenson? How many other writers in this genre do you read?
Not as many as I would like to. We kind of live in a nice time right now for thriller fans. There are a lot of great writers out there, but my time, I barely get these books done. So I don't get to read as much as I'd like.
Is it better in some ways that you don't, too? Do you think, in terms of clouding the issue a little bit and stuff sort of creeping in that you don't really want to creep in?
I've always felt that way a little bit. So I read a few when I can, and I just for enjoyment, just like I always read Vince. But the funny thing is I never, and this is kind of ironic, I never worried that much when I read Vince's books because he and I wrote nothing alike.
That's true.
And so now it's kind of funny that I write just like Vince.
When you started this whole process, I'm sure you hoped that it could go well, but you never know. It's a hard thing to do, and you never know how it's going to go. Could you have envisioned, it's hard for me to believe that it could have gone to this point any better than it has. I mean, could you have envisioned that at the time, that it would be flourishing and you get another deal and everybody seems happy?
No, I did not. I was hoping that 60% of the fans would be with me, and that no more than 20 would be really against me. The internet, it can be pretty negative.
Yes,
out
it can.
There. And that has not materialized at all. Everybody loved this character. They loved Vince, and they wanted to see his legacy and the character continue. And they were rooting for me. And that makes a difference, because they could have been rooting against me.
Has it been out long enough to know if it's off to a good start? I assume it is.
Yeah, people really like this book.
Enemy of the State is the new one, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we put out early editions, mm-hmm, to a lot of people, a lot of the big
right,
fans, Vince's big fans. And I think it's been pretty much uniformly a really positive reaction, as well as from the professional reviewers.
Outstanding. And I'm sure the display, I was mentioning earlier, you don't get the big prominent displays unless they think it's going to do really well, right? It's no accident how that works. That sort of placement, and, you know, compared to some books which are kind of wedged in a corner, sideways, you barely even can look at them.
Yeah, I've been lucky. It's nice to walk through the airports and stuff and see that thing front and center.
The bookstore appearances for Kyle, again, in town, Once Upon a Crime tonight, 7 o'clock in Minneapolis, and in Hudson, Wisconsin tomorrow at Chapter 2 Books. Thanks for coming in to see us. Much appreciated. Continued success. Always good to see you. I don't know if I'll run into you tomorrow night, because I'm going to be coming late while you're trying to get out of there early. But if not, we'll certainly hope to stay in touch and chat down the line.
Well, thanks for having me.
Safe travels as well. We'll come back, and don't forget, as I mentioned, Dr. Dan's inbox will be open at 4:30. Robert Smith is scheduled to join at 5:15 as well.
You can register to win a pair of tickets to see the Scott Brothers from HGTV's Property Brothers Friday, September 15th at Pantages Theater. Hey, my wife and I will be there. You can win yours, though, at KFAN.com, keyword contest.
Timing works out well, because 24 hours from now, in this very same studio from which we just chatted with Kyle Mills, Dylan O'Brien is scheduled to stop by and see us on his way to the big red carpet night for American Assassin, the new Vince Flynn motion picture. Dylan O'Brien in studio is the plan. That's what we have been told. That's what we are hoping and expecting. Right about 4 o'clock, tomorrow's program. We won't forget about football tomorrow, nor are we going to forget it or today. In fact, we talked football early, and we'll continue to do so. But tomorrow, Brian Billick will also join us to help us review the opening night, which you can hear on The Fan, the Patriots hosting the Chiefs, and also preview the Monday night game, Vikings and Saints, and really talk opening of the 2017 NFL season. Brian Billick tomorrow, I think, at 4:30.
Yes.
And we expect the prediction segment to return tomorrow at 3:30. That is our plan. We assume it'll be with Carl Gerbschmidt. We don't know. We assume it'll be with Dan from Woodbury, but frankly, we don't know that either. It's kind of open-ended. But if it comes to it, it'll be the two of us doing. Well,
no, it won't be the two of us,
because you're not available.
Yeah,
so it'll be the
Halverson.
One of us. It'll be me and Zach doing picks tomorrow night at 3:30. If we don't get Dan from Woodbury and or Mr. Gerbschmidt, who I think is going to return with his tail between his legs. Because
it's kind of pointing that way.
His effort to ingratiate himself into two other programs on this station were abject failures. The project the other day, I guess 2 days ago, yesterday, and then to this morning, I think he was on the Power Trip Morning Show.
Yes. And but to be fair, they didn't even know he was on because they had 15 people in the studio like they usually do. So he was on, but they didn't know.
No, there's some truth to that, actually.
So they just were talking over him.
Dr. Dan's inbox coming up at 4:30. We're out at 6 today because our Vikings programming begins, right?
It does. Vikings country, make a little noise.
Which is interesting because I always thought that didn't begin until after the first game. But apparently it's beginning before the first game. Let me guess. Everson Griffin, the guest?
It's not Everson Griffin.
Oh.
Upset. It's not Alex Boone.
No.
Yeah,
well,
Alex Boone
that
is
would
not,
be news.
Not included. Jeremiah Searles is Muss's guest.
Okay.
And it's in Cottage Grove.
Cottage Grove.
I don't remember the exact location.
Okay.
I'm going to text him right now because it's funny. I just texted him to ask about the guest to confirm.
Okay.
But it's in Cottage Grove. Jeremiah Searles will be your guy.
All right.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Cottage Grove?
I don't think so.
I was there for a wedding over the weekend. It's a nice place.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Nice town.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a minute.
I can see why Creasel likes living there.
Yeah.
I can see why other people like living there. But see, you know, it's like so far south and east from where I'm from. It's like it was like a day trip.
I'm
Junction
hoping...
70, by the way, is the place.
Junction 70 in Cottage Grove.
It was lovely.
That sounds like a cool name for a spot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can help me get to the bottom of this or not, because you may not be able to know all the answers to it, but I have found myself increasingly curious to find out why there seems to be such bad blood between Tyrone Carter and PJ Fleck. And that may be one-sided bad blood. I don't know. But it's very clear. I think Carter was on. Well, I don't think. I know. Tyrone Carter was on with the project this morning. I want to say in studio. Along with Ron Johnson, but you might know that better than I. And Carter, for not the first time, said, I'm not going to have anything to do with PJ Fleck and the Golden Gopher football program until I receive an apology.
What does that mean?
That's what I'm wondering. What does it mean? What happened? How does Tyrone Carter feel he was disrespected by PJ Fleck? And I guess my question to PJ Fleck would be, what would be his side of the story if indeed there's an allegation here of mistreatment on the part of Tyrone Carter? Now, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the key to whether Fleck is successful or not. But, you know, Tyrone Carter is, if we were to rank the best Golden Gopher football players ever, and I know there's a lot of jokes that people could do, but if we were to really rank them.
He had a great career.
He would definitely be top 10, right?
That's what I was going to say off the top of my head. I'm sure we're forgetting some people from like the
60s. Yeah, if you go back to the old days, but I'm saying even if you include them, I still think he might be top 10. I'm not saying he would automatically be top 5 all time, but I got to believe he would be top 10. He was a hell of a college football player.
He's right up there.
A hell of a college football player. And so, you know, all things being equal, you'd think that the head coach coming in, despite the fact that he wants to change the culture, would rather there be an affable relationship than one that seems to be open hostility, at least on the part of Carter. So, I think some of this might have to do with recruiting because there's somebody in Tyrone Carter family that the Gophers were recruiting some, and is it related to not liking the way that recruiting process went? I don't know because. As you know, this comes up all the time at this program, whether you're talking about football or basketball, and really maybe with other teams, but more so with the Gophers, I think, this notion that, well, they've done a really poor job over the years sort of reconnecting the alumni with the team and the program, and that's silly and that's stupid, and why wouldn't you want to have a good relationship and open arms, and it works for everybody, that if you got alumni who are going to bat for you, that's a good thing. And that we've heard this complaint historically. Now, part of it I tend to dismiss because I always think that alumni end up believing they're more important than they really are.
Correct.
That the time they were important was when they played, and coaches sort of have to move on. And I always think that it's better to have mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think that if you can build bridges, that's probably a good thing, but that I've tended to dismiss the concern because I think it ends up being a lot of needy guys who shouldn't care about that any longer. They had their run, and they should move on with the rest of their lives. So, you know, so I don't know if it's if it's something in the water here, or we're just more we got needier alumni, or what exactly it is. But this seems to come up from time to time. But this is the biggest one I've seen in a while, and the first one since this particular coach came aboard. And Carter's still in town. He's still, right? I mean, a lot of the time. Does he live here still?
Mm-hmm.
He's still extremely visible. And so I'm just hoping at some point somebody asks him, well, what's this about? I mean, he keeps saying, until I get an apology, I'm not going to have anything to do with this program. All right, well, what's the affront here? What exactly took place? And what is the obligation of any coach who comes in new, you know, and who is trying to say, I'm going to do it a different way? And it's to a certain extent already rubbed some people the wrong way. Even Jerry Kill, you could argue, the wrong way about, oh, it's got to be so different now compared to what it was before. And Kill was upset about even some comments alluded to by, I think, the AD in that regard. Not Norwood T. Who's our current AD?
Mark Coyle.
So, can you shed any light on this? I mean, and is it?
I've heard a lot of speculation and innuendo.
Yeah.
Nothing I would be comfortable,
right,
you know, rolling out. I do think it's up to Tyrone, if he's really got a beef, to go ahead and air it out.
Yeah.
If he's going to keep saying it,
right,
and he's going to keep alluding to it, and he's going to keep making public appearances and being asked about the Gophers,
right?
Because that's, I mean, honestly, that would be his value in any public appearance, right? It's what do you think,
absolutely,
about the program? What do you,
yeah,
think about the team?
Yeah.
So I would say it's up to him to deal with that. In terms of the needy alumni, I would say every school probably has them.
True.
I would say there are a lot of people, not just alumni, but like historically in my 6 years of being kind of closer to the program, at least working at the U a lot more, there are all kinds of people in the school, out of the school, alumni, former players, and all sports that feel like they're owed something, which is amazing to me. And that might be everywhere, but I think that's been one of the problems, is that there haven't been enough people at the school to say, well, bleep you about something. You know what I mean? To crack a couple of eggs, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Kill era started to do that a little bit. I know Norwood certainly started to do that.
Yeah,
that's why.
Right.
People
piled on him once he was vulnerable.
A line from, like a rush hour Lowry Hill tunnel line to just, you know, pound on Norwood when,
absolutely,
he was done, because he and some of the other people that he brought in came in and said, well, I don't care if we've always,
right,
done it this,
right,
way. And all of those efforts, I think, got discounted because of how Norwood crashed and burned. And that, to me, was disappointing, because I do think, you know, there was some good momentum in the department in terms of,
yeah,
reshaping it, like how other people run it, in all honesty, around the Big Ten, where, yeah, you have your alumni, you have your,
yeah,
people, you take input and stuff, but there's way too many people, in my opinion, having been around it 6 years, that feel like they are owed something and get really offended, and then, at first blush, just trash it as quickly as they can, like Tyrone is doing right now.
Well, my conflict on this is that I am a big believer, anybody's listened to this show, of history and of stuff that's come before and having some awareness.
For
and
sure.
If you're a new coach, I think it's important for you to have some concept of what has come before you, good, bad, or indifferent, especially the good part and the players who are good. I think that's what smart people and respectful people do. They have some acknowledgement, no matter how much they intend to reinvent the wheel and change the culture and all that stuff. Having some awareness, I think, is good. But I do think that schools like this probably need more alumni who pull aside other alumni and say, hey, this guy's going to do it his way.
Let the coaches coach.
He's got it. He should have the right to do it his way. We had our time. This thing, we're not the key to this. We have to stop pretending that we're going to relive the glory days. And that doesn't mean necessarily coaches should go out of their way to disrespect them, but I'm saying I think there is that issue. It reminds me of a scene. Do you remember the scene in Hoosiers where Gene Hackman is already having problems with the parents and with some of the dads about, well, who is this guy? Where,
mm-hmm,
does he come from? And he wants to slow down the ball. That's not the way we play. And eventually, one of the fathers is at practice. I think he's at practice, because they basically assembled for practice. They're going to have an insurrection. This is even before they have the town meeting.
Yes, it's the first. And the first one.
And one of the fathers basically says, hey, you, coach, you go take care of that. I'm going to take care of these guys. And basically, he says to the other...
He kicks him out of practice,
other,
right?
Coaches, or other,
yeah,
other would-be coaches, the other adult males, hey, let's get out of here. Let the guy do his job. What are we doing here? This isn't about us. And I think there's a need maybe at this school and maybe every school to have the occasional alumni stand up and say, you know, I may not necessarily think this is the best way to do it or whatever, but it really isn't about us anymore. We had our glory time where we were, you know, the big man on campus, whatever. We got to stop pretending that the key to success is whether the coach reaches out to us. You know, that's really making it too much about us and being a little bit too self-absorbed. And in the end, isn't really going to tell the tale on whether this particular coach does well or doesn't.
And that's the you just hit on the biggest part that frustrates me is that if some people don't get right. their way over the years or feel like they're being shut out, their response is to try to sabotage it almost. Their response is to try to undermine it, to talk badly, publicly, privately, whatever, about whoever's coaching. You know, this happened when Pitino let go of a longtime trainer.
Yeah, right.
Who people say was beloved. I don't know if he was beloved or not. I know that when there's change and there's one guy there, former players will come back and talk to him because he's the only guy they knew, right? So, of course, they're going to like the guy. And it's like, but people publicly just automatically will start trashing. It's like, well, then that shows me you don't really care about the program as much as you care about how you're viewed within it. Because that doesn't help. Like, whatever's going on now is not helpful. Whatever went on when they fired the trainer is not helpful. It doesn't help the kids that are there, right? It doesn't help the kids that are there right now trying to get ready to play Oregon State or whoever they're playing. So it really tells me you care more about how you should be viewed and how you fit in than actually how the program does.
Well, and you've hit on it. There's a lot of rumor here, and I think we both hesitate to go any more public with it than that because we don't even know how true the rumor is. You know, the recruiting approach maybe might have been part of this deal. But what exactly does that mean, and where is the line crossed? And this is still not the same to me as saying that that coaches should thumb their noses at what came before. To me, that's suicide and stupid and childish, frankly.
And I think most coaches understand that.
I think. Although I think some, not as much as others, because they do think some kind of say, hey, I'm,
we're happy
you know
for
what?
You.
Yeah, we're happy for what you did. I am who I am. And we don't need you, kind of thing. Well, maybe you don't, but so there's a fine line there. But there are, I think, as I said, too many alumni who almost want to be the big man on campus again. It's like, well, no, you had that time. You did that already. It's not your time any longer to do it. So don't make it so much about you.
Support the kids that do it. You know,
well, that's at least for a minute.
Like, that's why Bobby Bell is one of my favorite alumni of all time. Like he could argue he's the greatest Gopher, right, Bobby Bell?
He would have to be, yeah,
he's
very
like
close to the top of the
three,
list. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hall of Fame and everything.
Yes,
and he
comes
by every once in a while.
Right.
You know, he would come up to games.
Yeah.
And he just comes up. He just watches the kids. He'd talk in the locker room and say, I'd be happy to be teammates with any of you. Keep listening to your coaches. Do whatever you got to do. And then he's off. It's like that tells me a lot about his security of who he is,
right?
And what he's all about. And so there's a lot of guys like that, too. I mean, we don't want to paint all alumni with the same brush.
Absolutely
but it
not.
Is. It is interesting how some are needier than others.
I have a hunch, as often as Tyrone's not going public with it, that it's going to become a story, and maybe there can at least be a little bit more revealing of whatever the allegations are, and with Fleck also being given a chance to either engage in this, or maybe he's not going to be interested in it and run from it, but at least to respond to it as well. I got a couple of interests. Given that tonight is the start of the National Football League season, I got a couple of fascinating a football participation nuggets I want to get to. Some statistics that are new, fresh, and I think quite interesting. We'll come back with that and a couple of emails related to the Tyrone Carter discussion as well. Dr. Dan's Inbox 430. Robert Smith is scheduled to begin his endless series of Thursday appearances during the football season this very afternoon, right after Top 5. Call a mixed message. I got a press release from Portillo's yesterday.
Is that right?
They're introducing some new fall menu items. Here's my favorite from the mixed message department. The meatball salad.
The meatball salad?
Yes.
It sounds like a salad that Gerby would have in honor of meat sauce.
The salad features Tuscan spring mix and chopped romaine lettuce piled high with red onion, gorgonzola cheese, bacon, Portillo's house dressing, topped with two hand-rolled meatballs smothered with marinara sauce and sprinkled with grated Parmesan cheese.
I already forgot what lettuce.
Is this their way of saying, well, we got to get a little healthier. Got to put some more salad in there because everybody gets mad at all of our meat entries. So, you know what we'll do? We'll make a salad, but it'll be our kind of salad. And by the end of it, as you say, you've forgotten what kinds of lettuce are actually in it.
Do you remember what lettuce it was?
No, I don't anymore.
I think it was the spring mix.
I think it was and chopped romaine.
Was it deep fried?
Yeah, close enough. So that's coming.
The meatball salad. That does not sound good. The only way that sounds good is if the lettuce is not included.
Yeah.
If you can get the lettuce on the side, everything else in like a bowl.
And my guess is that's going to be the trick, that they're saying this to please the health food snobs, but that they fully expect most people are going to do what you suggest and say, just hold the lettuce and give me
the meatball salad.
The two hand-rolled meatballs smothered with marinara sauce and sprinkled with grated Parmesan cheese, although you could add the red onion, the gorgonzola cheese, the bacon, and the Portillo's house dressing if you'd like as well.
Are you hungry or are you starving?
You want more?
The Portillo's house dressing, it doesn't seem to me like it would be like the wildfire house dressing that I love so much.
I don't think it's going to be light.
Probably not.
Put it that way. It'll be heavy. Guests
yes,
can
like
also try the, is it Usinger's Bratwurst? How do you pronounce that? Usinger's. Is that a famous kind of bratwurst?
It must be Usinger. It seems like it's a good
topped
brand.
Topped with Bavarian-style sauerkraut and classic stone-ground German mustard, served on a special brat roll. They also are returning this fall, speaking of salads, the apple walnut harvest salad. Now, this one almost does sound like it might be healthy. Tuscan spring mix, chopped romaine, tossed with diced gala apples, dried cranberries, candied walnuts, gorgonzola cheese, and topped with grilled chicken and fat-free raspberry vinaigrette.
That's more. That's healthier.
A salad.
Yeah. See, but that's not a salad I'd be interested in
eating.
No,
of course. Not a Portillo's.
I don't know. No, I don't know why people, the apples in the salad and the fruit in the salad, something doesn't add up to me there. I've never been a fruit salad kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not working for me.
So there it is. That's the latest. That's from the mixed message department.
We haven't been back there lately.
No.
November,
well,
right?
That's November is if we're still on schedule for Maple Grove. And now that's not that far off.
I just went to the Great Clips yesterday in Knollwood, and the Chick-fil-A, the structure's starting to go up. The Chick-fil-A right there. It's going to be on the, I guess, east side of Knollwood, kind of right by Texas Avenue.
That's convenient.
It's going to be unbelievable.
Or
that's 4 minutes from here.
Or is it?
Okay, Gia. Or
it's convenient, but
Knollwood's a disaster.
It's daunting.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that Snelling location where the Starbucks is causing a backup onto the main street.
Yesterday.
Their drive through.
Yeah, that side of Knollwood I don't think is that difficult to get. Yeah, I guess it is, though, by the Papa Murphy's and the liquor store there and the bank and Cub. I guess it is kind of a pig
poop over
there.
So this is on the other side of 7?
No.
Oh.
It's on
the Where's the Cub? I don't even know where the Cub is.
It's right. So that's where it is. It's on the like northeast side. The Cub
Where is it compared to Nordstrom Rack?
Nordstrom Rack is on the west side.
Oh.
And then you come further down, you go by like Old Navy, DSW, Lian Chin's, Great Clips.
Oh yes.
Then you go around
I remember there's a Cub. Yeah.
The Cub
so
is facing the other way.
So that's where it's gonna be?
Up in that direction.
That is a little bit further south. Well, that is easier. I think that's a little better.
You can at least sneak in the Texas Avenue way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know if there's all kinds of construction going on there right now.
Then we ran into that on the way to Jackman's birthday party.
A war zone is what it is. listen to this. Football statistics related on, I guess you could say, participation. This is out of the Wall Street Journal today. Big high school sports story. The uncertain future of high school football in America. We touched upon this with Glenn Mason yesterday. I was quoting from a piece out of the Chicago Tribune. The SEC is widely considered the nation's toughest football league, and the devotion of its fans to the game shows up in the participation numbers at the high school level. Get this. In the 11 states where at least one university is a member of the SEC, a group stretching from Texas to South Carolina, high school football participation is up 6.2%. Since 2006-07. In the 39 states without an SEC football program, the number of high school football players is down almost 10%.
Wow.
That is kind of fascinating.
Yes.
Now, it varies. There's, you know, there's not any, they're not all hard and fast rules, but it's just fascinating to see that correlation between SEC football and the ongoing participation and a little bit of, loss around the edges, at least in a number of states where there is no SEC affiliation. So I think we're down. I think the state of Minnesota is down mildly. I think the state of Wisconsin, according to the map I looked at, is down even more extensively than here. That there are more and more kids, and it's what we talked about yesterday. It's a little bit of a class thing, in that if you have, if you're viewed to have options from a sports standpoint, you got more parents who are trying to influence their kids away, you know, turn them away from football a little bit to other sports, maybe more the country club sports, whatever else you might want to, however else you want to describe those sports. The good news is that even with all these stories indicating, you know, a little less participation at the lower levels, you're not going to have to worry about it tonight. You're not going to have to worry about it this weekend. You're not going to have to worry about it Monday night, or for really quite a long time. Now, eventually, it might have an impact, and I think that's why people are doing these stories, but if football is your religion, and if you're not in the group that feels any guilt about associating yourself with this sport, even with what we're learning about it, you're not going to have to worry about, let's say, a fall without pro football for quite a while, right? I mean,
I'd say at least a generation.
At least a generation, right? Maybe two generations. Or it's going to be what we've said before, that the only thing that's going to change is who's participating. And it's sadly, in a way, it's going to become more of a poor person's sport, because perhaps it's viewed as that those individuals don't have as many sports options, and for them it is a sort of a way out a bit, and that's what changes, not necessarily that the sport itself goes away. I thought they were pretty interesting stats. We'll come back with Dr. Dan's inbox. That's going to be opened up. Garzy says he's got some good ones this week.
Very football-centric.
Really?
People have the scent.
Yeah.
I mean, people have picked up the scent when it comes to football, so we have a lot of football letters to get to.
And speaking of football, Robert Smith makes his first Thursday appearance during the 2017 football season, or the season about to begin, right after the Top 5 at 5. Interesting email that's just come in. If Common doesn't join you and Carl for the pick segment tomorrow, and we don't even know, I guess, for sure, you're still jousting with Gerb Schmidt via Twitter.
Well, he's claiming that his contract is
up. Yeah, I know. Have you ever considered a rotating celebrity guest picker? Chad Morrow, that's how our prediction segment began. And the only reason we kind of moved away from that was it is a bit of a burden on the producer, I must say, to get somebody different every week. But that's a thought. Maybe we should go back to that.
Well, what ended up happening, I remember, in the bumper-to-bumper era, at one point, Common was just the celebrity picker. Remember, he would do impressions of somebody
every single week? That's true.
I think that was before my time.
Yeah, you might be right.
But I remember listening to it every week. And, like, once you got to, like, week seven...
Yeah, we ran out.
He was kind of out. You know what I mean? Because, like, Dylan...
Only so many times you can do Dylan.
Yeah, and you can't really do Dylan talking.
No.
So... that was the bit for a while, and then I don't remember how it somewhere before I jumped on board, you guys figured out the current state of the predicament. I could do that. We could come up with a list
of things. Offers a few ideas. Paul Majors, Andrew Zimmern, Rod Carew, Neil Broughton, Arnie Carlson.
Tyrone Carter.
Yeah, well, possibly. I'm not even here ripping him necessarily. I need to know a little more. I think we need to know a little more or let it go. But in any case... because somebody tried to bring up to me, well, he's unhappy with the sexual assault investigation last year. Well, he might have been, but...
that has nothing to do with
that. That has nothing to do with this, because he's saying this is directly related to being disrespected by P.J. Fleck. So, that would suggest more than one grievance in that particular case. Does the name Cato Kalin ring a bell? I'll say to Carl, if he's trying to play hardball...
the K-train.
I'll DM Cato tonight if he wants to play this game out, and we'll have, even if Common doesn't show up, as our sort of resident Packers stooge, we will have
Cato Kalin tomorrow afternoon. There's not a doubt in my mind. So be careful, Mr. Gerbschmidt, if you're listening, which I doubt that you are, about overplaying your hand, because you already have looked foolish doing it. You had no chemistry with Paul Allen. You had less than no chemistry with the pride, with the morning show. So it's up to you if you want to continue to embarrass yourself. Meanwhile, is it time for Dr. Dan's inbox?
It's time for Dr. Dan's inbox.
I guess it is.
Big shout out to Dave Allen, because I asked him today, finally, I think this is like episode number 4 of Dr. Dan's inbox, to have this music underneath for the entire time, right?
Makes
to just
sense.
Loop it. So we've got a couple of different couple of minutes now.
Oh, good.
So I feel like it does add, it gives me a little bit of jump when I read it. Very football-centric today. We've got, four, five, six or so.
Man, I don't know if we'll get to them all. We'll try.
We'll give it a try. Some of them are evergreen, as we say, in the business. Dear Dr. Dan,
I'm terrified, Dr. Dan, truly frightened for my safety and well-being. This is not a feeling I'm used to having either. Normally, I embrace the savagery and enjoy stirring the pot while making blind decisions from the security of my lavish NYC office. I've been bloodied, bruised, and beaten by the public for years. Mm. Ultimately, though, I've chewed and spit out a wealthier, more untouchable man. But this, Dan, is something that a humble man like myself might not be able to withstand. The masses are out for me tonight, waving offensive towels depicting me as a clown. The boos will be deafening. I'll do my best to make it look like I'm not hurt. Any advice helps. Maybe it's just a promotion for that new It movie. Wish me luck, R. Goodell, who I believe will be in Foxborough tonight.
So is that confirmed?
I think it's confirmed.
Are they doing any kind of they're not doing like a ring ceremony in Foxborough tonight, are they?
I'm sure they are.
You think they are?
Yes.
Do they do
what
that?
What else are they going to get their rings?
I would think Belichick would be bored with that.
One for the thumb. You never get bored with showing people your rings.
Well, R. Goodell is Dr. Dan. Dr. Dan and has had a really good relationship with R. Goodell over the years, I think, as people who listen to this program know. It's just, there's certain guests you have on where you just seem to get each other and have a good vibe. That would certainly be the case between Dr. Dan and R. Goodell.
It was a great conversation.
It was an outstanding conversation.
Same
I think we've had actually more than one, and they've always gone really, 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 really well.
Good sense of humor on the part of R. Goodell.
Very
There's
much
no question
so.
About that. All you can do is grin and bear it tonight, right? I mean,
the more Dr. Dan's advice, I guess, would be you got to be as loosey-goosey as you possibly can be tonight. There's no point in being defensive. You gotta laugh at all the jokes that are going to come your way. You got to sort of take the medicine. Look, you got $40 million a year in the end. You're laughing all the way to the bank. So whenever you feel kind of defensive or on the defensive or a little frustrated about people making fun of you in Foxborough, and no one's going to get close to you because you got a great security contingent. The goons are not going to let anybody.
Do you think Burke stands right in front of them, or do you think he stands like off to the side a little bit?
Well, they're tethered. That much is for sure.
Yeah.
Just have fun with every. Turn the other cheek as often as you can, because the moment you actually appear agitated,
yes, they've got you.
And engage, they've got you. The media is going to make that the key story tonight, as opposed to the Patriots opening the season against the Kansas City Chiefs. And you're doomed. So that's. I think he's smart enough to know that, but it's. I guess you can never be sure.
It'd be interesting how Kraft handles it, right? Because Kraft took some pretty frontal shots on the podium, if you'll recall, when he got the trophy.
That's true.
Wherever the Super Bowl was, Houston, I guess, this last year.
Yeah, he was subtle but effective.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. So you wonder, is he going to open?
What's the spread on tonight's game?
The Patriots are favored, Dan, by 9 points. Yeah.
There are people who believe this is going to be another all-time great New England Patriots team. And there are other people who want to. The fashionable pick out of the AFC has become the Steelers, I think in part because people just get tired of picking the Patriots.
Yeah, Raiders
and the
are in there too, right?
Are a factor. I mean, I'm not saying they're not any good, but.
They got the good running back. They got the great receiver. They got Big Ben. People like saying
Big
Ben.
Didn't New England already lose a receiver?
They lost, is it Amendola or Edelman?
Edelman.
They lost Edelman.
Doesn't matter.
For the year. They'll find another guy who played rugby in college and just play him in.
Didn't they already? I think they already acquired another wide receiver since, and he's going to be brilliant.
They traded their third quarterback. Who did they trade him to? I can't remember.
I can't recall.
They traded their third quarterback.
Right, that's right. That's exactly
the guy who started the game and won for him a year ago. Brissett? But anyway.
Yeah, I think it's Indianapolis, because Indianapolis has got quarterback issues.
You
right
are right, Andrew Luck, yes.
Yeah. It's time for Dr.
More football.
Dan's
Why wouldn't there be? Dear Dr. Dan, It's the start of a new football season, and I don't have my beautiful girlfriend at my side for the first time in 3 years. Though it is lonely, I know I can find comfort and solace with the fans. It will be nice to not have to read about my girlfriend affecting how I play in the letters to the editor in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But I plan on filling the extra time I have in the film room. I was wondering if you could ask your friend Carl for any suggestions on what to do in Green Bay when I do have some free time. Sincerely, A. Rogers. A. Rogers.
Dr. Dan doesn't pretend to know personally A. Rogers and what...
You don't text and talk more than people know.
We don't, but my gut tells Dr. Dan that Green Bay ain't Aaron Rodgers' kind of place. That he's kind of above it. And that he doesn't... Well, that is a good point. And so I don't think there's any need to go to Gerbschmidt because the things... I mean, Gerbschmidt would suggest going to a sausage factory in Wisconsin is entertaining. I don't think Aaron Rodgers wants to see the sausage made. I don't think he's too worldly. He's a thinker. And it appears, by the way, that he has gotten over Olivia Munn more easily than Olivia Munn has gotten over him.
That is
what the gossip columnists are suggesting.
I didn't realize this.
I don't know if that's true, but that is indeed what has been intimated. So it will be fascinating to see what, because as you know, certain assumptions will be made. If Aaron Rodgers plays poorly, that's the thing. I mean, when he struggled early last year, the team did, it was considered Olivia Munn's fault, right?
Yes.
So,
and then his family gave him some trouble too, right? His family's been pretty frontal the last couple of years, how he doesn't talk to him anymore.
What if he struggles more this year? They can't blame it on Olivia Munn anymore, can they?
I don't think they can.
Yeah, that'll be... Now, if he's brilliant, if he's even better than he was last year...
Then nobody will ever date Olivia Munn ever again.
And the story is pretty much... it's a story of vindication, validation for those who said that perhaps Olivia Munn had gone Yoko Ono on the bit and somehow... taken away the best that Rodgers had to offer. Although, wasn't the Vikings or the Packers' biggest problem last year a porous defense?
It seemed like it, but they think they've improved
it.
Do you know how many yoga places there actually are in Green Bay? I'm shocked.
Four?
No, way more than that.
Oh, come on.
Yoga Hut, Yoga, Inspire Power Yoga, Grace Yoga Studio, Bay Area Yoga Center, everybody's yoga. It's basically right next to Lambeau.
How many of those in those locations do you think they wear Zubas for their yoga class?
I would assume most of them.
Good percentage.
But it doesn't mean that it's not being offered.
Yeah.
I thought for sure there wouldn't even be, Namaste Yoga, Nutrition and Wellness, Inner Soul Yoga, and Cycle. Ferguson Family YMCA, they offer yoga. Did I mention Inspire Power Yoga?
I think you did.
There's enough places for them to fill the
time. Any hot yoga?
I feel like Namaste Yoga, Nutrition, and Wellness got some hot.
Yeah.
Yoga Hut, that seems like it'd be hot. You know, the huts in a desert climate.
Speaking of A-Rodge, I don't know if I mentioned this on air or if you were even working this particular day, because there haven't been that many days you've been on lately, but...
Wow. Making sure I'm listening there. I'm off tomorrow.
And off again tomorrow on your way to the West Coast.
I asked Louie, he called in during the break. I said, you coming to Corvallis? He said, where's that? With Corvallis, like Oregon State. No, I'm not going there.
Louis too big for that.
Yeah, Corvallis. No, but anyway,
there was a. I don't know if it was ESPN. It was in ESPN the magazine or just online. A really good Aaron Rodgers profile, and I know for a lot of Vikings fans,
I need to read that. You're right.
If you're interested in pro football at all, and you're interested in good writing, good reporting, it was a fascinating piece in which the lead of it is. Rodgers has agreed to meet with the reporter from ESPN. And so she basically asks, all right, generally the way this thing goes is we will meet at a neutral location like a restaurant or something. Or, you tell me a place to go where you live or have an apartment or a condo or whatever, and I go there. In this case, Rodgers insisted that they meet where she lives. And it was kind of an interesting wrinkle as she sort of sets up the rest of the story. Because I don't think that happens that often where the source, of the story or the subject of the story ends up saying, I'll go to wherever you live. But it was kind of an interesting twist. But the story's very well done. A lot of good Rodgers insight, I think.
Hmm.
And he has always been. Look, I mean, I think the guy probably has some jackassiness to him and some arrogance and pomposity to him. I don't think there's any question about that. That's been exhibited, I think, revealed from time to time. But he's also, I think he is a pretty interesting character.
Oh, why don't you move to Green Bay then?
It's time for Dr.
Dan.
Man, bitterness.
How many more do you think we have here?
Three.
Did we do three more?
I don't know if you can, because I got one we're going to have to read that I just got moments ago.
All right. I'm going to go to this one.
I mean, I won't even need to respond to it. It speaks for itself, but it's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Dan, I used to be front and center, being on all the media channels, even to the point of exhaustion by the consumer. Now, someone has taken all my thunder. I'm hard to be found. This person who has done this to me is M. Russo. Do you have any recommendations on how to get back to the former annoying state in which media channels used to splash me? Thanks. K. Kardashian. K. Kardashian. Not to be confused, by the way. If I can get to this one real quickly. Dear Dr. Dan, although I've been on the radio 7 times a day and had a waiting for a white puff of smoke for a new Pope-like announcement, do you think Minnesotans miss me? Sincerely, from Starbucks, M. Russo.
Those are very good. I like them both. I have to say, Kay Kardashian, I'm not surprised that
50 minutes are up.
Mr. Russo has caught your eye, because when it comes to mining media opportunities, I'm not sure the Kardashians have anything on our M. Russo. Do you?
No, nothing. Not lately.
He has become, lately especially, an utter genius when it comes to working those channels and milking those opportunities, and for that we love him.
I'm pretty sure he's on the halftime show of Westwood One's coverage tonight on The Fan, Kansas City and New England.
It would make all the sense in the world. I thought you had it on a long loop.
Well, I did, but I wanted to hear another one. Oh, you want me to read one more?
Yeah, you can real quick.
I feel like we've gotten this one before. It might be
redundant.
It might never be stopped redundant. Us on this show.
No, it might be redundant, but it also might be a message to somebody. Huh? Dear Dr. Dan, I need your advice. I currently have, I think, 2 jobs. One is the producer of a great radio show in town. You may know it. The other is being a sideline reporter and host to an elite college football team in town. I'm truly currently flectomized by the coach. My problem is, how do I moonlight with my second job more to parlay that into a high-level competitive position at the University of Minnesota? Signed, Jay Gard. P.S. Please row the boat. I feel like we've gotten this one maybe a couple of weeks ago.
I think we've got, and I think we're going to get this one probably every week the rest of the season.
Well, you've really set a fire and a tone of me doing anything I can to not be on the show. And
well, pretty also much. You left at 5:07 yesterday.
And leave the show as quickly as possible, just generally.
The top 5 at 5 became the top 2.5 at 5, and you pretended it was because I'm really worried about the clock management of this show. I vowed to make it better this year. And the truth is, you wanted to get in your car sooner so you could prepare for the PJ Fleck Show live and your appearance on it, in which apparently you were a bump on a log.
That's what I was called earlier today.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been a tortuous 24 hours.
Now, and I'm looking at a tweet from you. There's a tweet from Minnesota on Big Ten Network. It's Game 2 under Coach Fleck, and it's J.G. Caffan on the phone to tell us how Gopher football is prepping for Oregon State while you're on with us. How is that possible? I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, you've played into your own joke with that tweet.
You think that was part of the plan?
It might have been.
Yeah, I mean, I was on with you, yet I was on with Mike Hall on the Big Ten Network at the same time. I don't know how I did it.
One last late breaking. Generally, Dr. Dan doesn't screen his own Dr. Dan's mailbag.
No, they all come to me.
But I think this one is worth a quick read. Dear Dr. Dan, I recently heard that Tyrone Carter has vowed to never be associated with the University of Minnesota football program ever again, after he was disrespected and treated unfairly. Some people are giving him heat about how he's acting and saying he's being really childish, but if I were in his situation, I'd do the same thing. What do you think? Asking for a friend. Sincerely, Jay Kill. I don't even think we need to say anything.
No, we don't.
Dr. Dan doesn't even need to respond to this.
Hashtag enough said.
It speaks for itself. It is enough said. It's brilliantly done, and we thank you, as always, for playing the game. Send Dr. Dan emails next week, because we're doing this every week now with a great sponsor, Prism Clinical Research, to jg@kfan.com, and we will attempt to keep it rolling. Robert Smith will keep the 5 o'clock hour rolling after the top 5 at 5, which will include what?
You know, I haven't done it. I was planning on going to dinner with Fleck and Patino at 5:10, so I was hoping Zach Halverson would be here, but it doesn't look like it. We'll talk about some Gopher Hoop stuff. Some times have been set for their season. TCF Bank has made another investment in the future of University of Minnesota athletics. What was your favorite Roger Federer moment? And a coach injured during a celebration. We'll give you details on that when we return.
Any Leach news?
We could get some Leech news in there, too. I've got it pulled
some
up.
Some really nice Leech audio you can't make up. Stay tuned.
Just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, fueled by Super America.
Do we have a, have we established a Cato Kalen Twitter sounder? Did we have one made?
We did for the Brewers
thing. Yeah, do you have that?
Yeah.
Can you morph into that? Because there's one we've got, I've got to read.
Following Cato Kalen, following the Brewers. The Milwaukee
Brewers. This was, I think, from yesterday, but I just noticed it. It's in that category on Twitter that reads, in case you missed it. Cato Kalen. I'm so FN pissed. Counsel, your book, How to Lose and Be a Vomit Manager, is a bestseller only in Brewers dugout and clubhouse. Team believes in you. How to Lose and Be a Vomit Manager. That's the name of the apparently the counsel,
that's the
Craig Counsel book.
Tough for it to come out the same week as the new Kyle Mills book. It's got
a
that
vomit
competition.
Manager. It's too good.
Available now in the Brewers dugout.
Apparently in the hardcover. And it'll be out in paperback in about 3 or 4 months. You can also get it online via Amazon.
I think Cato Kalen's doing the book on tape as well, if you'd prefer to get it that way.
That would actually be worth paying for.
He does call him Craig by the book counsel.
He does.
He is not happy about anything the manager does. Monday at U.S. Bank Stadium, the Minnesota Vikings season begins against the New Orleans Saints.
I can't wait.
Adrian Peterson returns. Mike Zimmer trying to downplay that, I think, yesterday, saying this thing earlier today. That's not about Adrian Peterson. It's about the Vikings and the Saints and all of that. I'm wondering if you know, Dan, and you'll know this tomorrow for the prediction segment, what the spread is on the Vikings-Saints
game. That is a fascinating question. I'm going to say the Vikings are favored by 1.5.
The Vikings, Dan, are favored by 3.5.
3.5?
According to the newspaper today.
Whoa!
Did you see, by the way, Oregon State favored by 2.5 over the Golden Gophers Saturday.
So if we win, it'll be an upset.
It's an upset if we win.
Yeah.
Started the week, according to some, as favorites, and it has gone. The money has gone in on
the other direction. Yeah,
so take that for what it's worth.
Okay.
The injury report. First injury
report
of the year.
We're healthy, aren't we?
Pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Here's the injury report for today, because today's like the first day, really, that they are practicing for the Saints. This is because it's a Monday night game, 6 o'clock.
Correct.
So this is the first official injury report. We'll get one tomorrow. We'll get one on Saturday as well, leading up to the game on Monday. Danny Isadora, knee injury, did not participate. Tremaine Brock, who we just traded for, groin injury, limited participant. Brian Robinson, also groin injury, limited participant. Marcus Sherrills, with his foot injury, was a full participant. Anthony Harris, with his quad injury, was a full participant. The offensive line, 1 through 5 today, was limited in practice today, but it had nothing to do with injury.
Unbelievable. Do you won't even give them a chance.
I don't even know who they are,
to be honest with you. They don't know who they are.
I don't know who's on the line. I know there's an Easton. I know there's an F line.
There's a Sheena Easton.
Yeah. There's a Zach F line, or Efron.
Right.
I know that there's a Remmers, right?
Is there a Searles on there? No, he's coming up at 6 tonight.
He's on Vikings Country. Playing? Is he going to be one of the guys? Maybe
probably
Musk could ask him.
By week 2 or 3, he will be.
There's a Riley Reiff.
Yeah, there is.
We think. So, I don't know. But that's what I know. That you're right. We are a healthy bunch, at least according to the injury report. No one really that I know.
Can I tell you something?
On the Saints.
I'm not making my official prediction today.
You going to sleep on it?
But I have a real bad feeling about this opener.
Me too.
I really do.
I have a bad feeling about
the
season.
Beyond the offensive line, though, I have an odd feeling that it's going to be a big bounce back year for the Saints, that they're finally going to get something going defensively. Breeze is still damn good. The offense is still real, and that we have more than a fighting chance to start the season 0-2. Just saying.
Well, to keep going, you know the rest of the schedule, right?
Yeah, okay.
Tampa Bay is going to be good.
Maybe 0-5.
Everybody thinks Tampa Bay is good.
Right.
You've got the Lions. We lost to them twice last year. You go to the Bears. We've won one game there in the last 20 years, basically.
Well,
Packers
should
here.
Should we just
Ravens
not even bother
here.
With the season?
Well,
you're more negative than I am.
We've got to play it.
Yeah.
I know. I just don't have. I don't know. I don't they want got, to. I don't like the feeling. I just don't have a good feeling.
The one thing they do well is they blitz the hell out of people. So, Bradford, gets sacked 9 times. Breeze dices us up. Peterson's brilliant at times. And I have a feeling it might not even be close on Monday night.
We need the Super Freak to give the talk.
Maybe that would be the counter. Yeah.
He did a conference call today. He's going into the Ring of Honor. He's going to be here Monday because it is a Monday night football game. Randy is eligible next summer for an entry for a spot as a first ballot Hall of Famer in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was asked about that, what that would mean to him to be a Hall of Famer on a conference call earlier today.
And what did he say?
There's a lot of different avenues we could go down with the Hall of Fame, Moss said. The voting, the criteria, all that stuff. All I know is I just played the game to the best of my ability. I put my mark, I put my stamp, I put my family's name on football and the National Football League. You can't get any higher. Wherever people hold me or wherever they put me, that's up to them. I know deep down in my heart when it's all said and done, I know where I stand. I stand up there with the greats. First ballot or not, I understand what it is, man. It's a political war, and I was one of those guys who didn't play politics, nor do I intend to play politics, so I know what I stood for. I know what my game is. I gave it all to the game, 14 years through the ups and downs. I gave my commitment to the National Football League, like it or not. Anything else you want me to say?
Martyrdom, thy crown is heavy? Is that? No, it's something like that. Didn't play those political games, did he? That's not... For anybody who's ever pushed back on Randy Moss, who is an incredibly influential receiver and will be a Hall of Famer, whether it's first ballot or not, I don't really care. First time around or not, I don't really care.
Super Bowl.
The martyrdom thing, doesn't that get old? I mean, honest to God. That's what he thinks. It's why he just didn't play by the media rules. You didn't play by the team rules from time to time, man. That's why... How many times does a Hall of Fame player get moved around as often as Randy Moss did? I mean, not that often. It happens, but not that often, to tell you the truth. Was it political for them, or was there a little something that occasionally gnawed at people about the way Moss approached things? But, of course, in his world, it's all the politics, and it's all about being a martyr. I thought last time he was in town, he seemed like he was kind of past that nonsense. But apparently
he is. I don't think he was asked about
it. That's probably it. You're probably right. That's probably the answer.
Your guy on the mound tonight, he of the 5.33 ERA. His name is Kyle Gibson. He's on the bump, as some people call it. Bump on a log. 7:15 Central Time tonight, your Minnesota Twins back in action on the road, kicking off a 4-game series against the Kansas City Royals as they start the series tonight, and as they enter this 4-game series before I think they come back home, they are 1.5 game up on the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in the wild card spot for the second wild card spot. Still 3 games back of the Yankees, 0.5 game up on the Angels, 1.5 up on the Baltimore Orioles, and the Royals are somewhere down there about 2.5 games back of the Twins. So if the postseason started today, Dan,
we're in.
The Minnesota Twins would be a Yankee Stadium.
Who do we have
Stadium.
Pitching tonight?
Your guy, Gibby.
Gibby's tonight. He's been brilliant lately. Yeah.
He's won 3 in a row. His ERA is just plummeting.
He's been the stopper lately in terms of our rotation, for sure. And how far behind us is Kansas City?
Kansas City.
Appreciably, I think, aren't
they?
Is it 3 or 4?
2.5 back from us.
Well, then, so this is their, you could say this is their big chance to get back in the thing. I don't know how motivated they are. Or how much they're just waiting for the end of the regular season. They've been very up and down post All-Star.
It's been strange. Right, yeah, they've had an interesting run.
What do we got on Sano? Anything new?
I haven't seen anything.
All right.
Yeah, unless I've missed something, but I haven't seen anything. Let's get to the Mike Leach sound because we've got a minute or two.
Oh, I love it. I just love it.
We've played Mike Leach sound bites over the years because everybody's played Mike Leach sound bites over the years. He is still the head coach of the Washington State Cougars. Despite losing the Holiday Bowl to your Minnesota Golden Gophers upset fashion 17-12 last December, I don't know why he was asked this question or what was going on out there in Pullman. You know what? It was a fan-submitted question I'm being told.
I think they have one a week.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
They should actually do that with PJ.
It's a great idea.
But it was, do you believe in Bigfoot? And here was the answer Mike Leach gave.
I hope there's Bigfoot. I don't think there is. The reason I don't think there is, because
we found bones of dinosaurs and everything else, but we haven't found bones that I've heard of, Bigfoot, aliens. I suspect there is, and I don't know that they're they're little green men, and I don't know that they're specifically in our galaxy. Why wouldn't God build other Earths and other places? Why only this one?
Yeah.
You know, and even if you're an evolution guy and lightning striking mud and, you know, popping in, I mean, they say, well, the notion of God is far-fetched. Oh, really? Striking mud and then light, you know, sparking out of there and then it going like that? Well, I mean, well, that's just such an obvious, easy path to follow. I don't know that
what
they
a philosopher.
Would, you know, just be hostile mutants and the rest, you know. They might look, you know, remarkably like us, where style-wise or something, they evolved a different direction. Maybe buildings, cars, different, who knows, you know. But I certainly wouldn't rule out, I certainly wouldn't rule out life somewhere else other than just Earth. Because, see, to me, that seems like a lot less of a stretch than the notion that, oh, we're the only one. We're the only one special enough that lightning struck a puddle of mud. Or we're the only one special enough that God cares about enough to have life on this planet.
Yeah.
Say, I don't believe that. I mean, everybody wants to be special, but I don't think we're that special.
It's a very, yeah, I mean, his point is, it's a very self-absorbed position to think that we're it. That there's, you know, not any other meaningful life anywhere else out there in the galaxy. And he could have been ours. We could have hired Mike Leach.
A couple of different times.
At least twice. And never really.
It looks like he looks happened. Good. It looks like he's lost a lot of weight.
You think he slimmed down a little bit?
I think he has.
Yeah.
I think he's got on a good program. It looks like he looks sleek. I'm losing myself in his eyes.
How does he feel about his players' fat little girlfriends these days?
I haven't mentioned that lately.
Remember that one?
Of course.
Well, how many years ago was that?
It was a long time. It was at Texas Tech still, if I remember right. Speaking of college sports, the announcement came down today. TCF Financial Corporation and the University of Minnesota announced that they have amended their sponsorship agreement for the original bank, TCF Bank Stadium, that immediately invests $8 million in the university's Athletes Village and will also provide $541,000 in additional revenue over the remaining agreement.
Boy, they've re-upped big time.
You may recall, TCF... This is one of the great deals for a corporation of all time in 2005.
Yeah.
They entered into a 26-year, $35 million sponsorship agreement with the University of Minnesota to support Golden Gopher Athletics. They are now extending that. They have an option for another 10 years through the 2040 season, which includes, like I said, the $4 million initial contribution to the university if they exercise that option. So, more money from TCF. To the University of Minnesota, to the Athletes Village, which is going up as we speak.
A little disappointed that you didn't break that story or that Louis didn't on our airway instead of having to find it out through a press release of some sort.
Yeah, they really like to hold that stuff tight, don't they?
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, just once I'd like to see Louis break one of those stories on our air.
What he does, he usually breaks.
He hints at stuff.
Or he'll say they have more money than is publicly been announced.
That's true.
Been reported.
That's as specific as he tends to get.
That's usually it. Real quickly, because we've got Robert Smith in just a couple of minutes, the times and dates for Gopher basketball, or the dates have been established. The times and the TV networks have now been established for the upcoming season, which you will hear on News Talk AM 1130, as well as right here on The Fan. 23 nationally televised games at minimum for the University of Minnesota. And if you are one of those that doesn't like the weeknight 6 o'clock starts at the barn because you got to fight traffic, you got to get down there. People are leaving. You're in the meat grinder.
Ain't gonna happen that much, huh?
You don't have to worry about them at all.
In
the Big Ten conference season, not one 6 o'clock home game.
So how is that? What changed? Is there are the timing of their games changed or what?
Not a ton has changed in the Central Time Zone because there's so many teams out east now.
I see,
like Ohio State, Michigan. You know, Rutgers, Maryland, all those, they usually get the 6 o'clock starts. Here in the Midwest, usually it's an 8 o'clock start. But I just think there are more of them this year for whatever the reason. You know, Northwestern, 8 o'clock. Nebraska, 8 o'clock. Michigan State, 8 o'clock. Iowa, 8 o'clock. No home 6 o'clock games this year. In fact, only one on the road as well. The rest are either 6:37 or on the weekends where it doesn't matter.
No, there goes the dream of bump at the barn.
I know. Bumping the Barn is going to be tough to do.
We were looking forward to that. Now, it's going to have, if it happens at all, it'll have to be on sermons, apparently, huh?
Yeah.
Don't we have an 11 o'clock start once or twice?
That one I even read wrong. That was a Saturday.
Oh, no.
So, I don't know what we're going to do. Maybe we'll do, maybe like Wednesday for the Big Ten ACC Challenge, we'll do it. Something like that. But anyway. So, yeah, maybe no Bump in the Barn this year, but we'll figure it out. It'll
Emailer,
be high-level competitive stuff.
Emailer Chris, I'm really enjoying the Bump and Bump on a Log show. Keep up the good work. Yeah,
that's what we have right
that's
now.
That's what we got going
so
right
we talked
now.
About before the show.
Yeah, no question about that. So that's 4.5 to 5, close enough, because we want to check in with Robert Smith, talk some college football with him, talk some pro football with him as well. And I want to get his view on a story we alluded to briefly yesterday. Seattle's Michael Bennett is very unhappy with the way he says he was treated by the Las Vegas police a while back, I think the night of the big fight. And that has become a major sports subject throughout the National Football League. We'll get Robert's view on that as well. He is next here in the Fan.
This is Barrero on the Fan.
A little bit later tonight, the football season officially kicks off, which means the fantasy football season officially kicks off. And there's still time for you to go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, use my code KFAN, and get yourself started with our preferred way to play fantasy sports here at the Fan. At least it is for me. Know it is for Nordo. Know it is for Brandon as well. Fantasy football for everyday rubes, busy rubes, people that don't have time to lock in on Waiver Wire Wednesday, to lock in every single day, to try to make trades, to worry about bye weeks during the draft. Guys that just want to play every once in a while or play a bunch of different contests every single week. And you know what? The investment doesn't have to be huge. They have contests starting at just $1. That's my preferred way to play. And I've won cash prizes over the years playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. FanDuel.com is a website. Click the Join Now button. Our code is KFAN. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com. Sign up with my code KFAN. That's FanDuel.com. Please use my code KFAN.
KFAN, total traffic.
And now from the Holiday Station Stores Traffic Center. Got an accident northbound 169 right after 394. Crash on southbound Highway 100, blocking the left lane at Highway 7, backing up traffic at 394. Southbound 35W, delay start at University with a crash at Washington. Northbound 35W, backing up at County Road C. On westbound 94, delay start at Huron to Lindale. Then from Plymouth to 57th, eastbound 94, an accident at Highway 280, backing up traffic at Riverside. I'm Dylan with Traffic on the Fan, brought to you by Indeed.com. Hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com. Post your job in minutes. Manage your candidates from an easy-to-use dashboard. Post your next job on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com.
Hey.
Hey, Miss Riddle, I'm stuck in the middle again. I don't know how, but you got me playing both ends of a game I should know all about. That you came and turned inside out. Hey, Miss Riddle, I'm stuck in the middle again.
Don't forget, we're out at 6 o'clock tonight. Vikings season, of course, begins Monday, and our Thursday programming starts this evening at 6 o'clock with Vikings. What do we call it? Vikings Uncensored? No.
Vikings Country.
Vikings Country. The special guest.
Jeremiah Searles.
Jeremiah Searles,
Junction
a member
70
of our much beleaguered offensive line. That's among the subjects we'll get to with Robert Smith on the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Eye Care Hotline. Welcome back. Been a while since we've chatted with you. How have you been?
Good. Busy.
A lot of stuff going on.
The kids may be interrupting the calls anymore.
That's fine. We're used to that. We're accustomed to that. That's part of the deal. That's okay. We'll work through that for sure.
I'm not walking around the city of Chicago, and I probably won't swear during the first call.
But you can't promise that. You said probably. You're not guaranteeing.
I said that is correct. I probably won't.
You were very precise. Yeah, I should have known. I want to talk some college football and preview the purple a little bit, even though I don't know that you've been able to see pretty much all Vikings action. There's still a couple things I think you can address. But let's get to, I guess, the football topic right now, having to do with Seattle Seahawks defensive end Michael Bennett, who, of course, has come out very vocal about an incident in August. I think this was the night of the big fight in Vegas, saying that he was profiled and very badly treated, ended up on the ground, handcuffed, and apparently a cop, the video showing a cop with a gun to his head. And pretty much everybody is weighing in on it. The commissioner has expressed some concern. Pete Carroll has gone even further, basically saying that, man, we got a lot of stuff. This is a rather eye-opening kind of a deal, in his own support for Bennett. What do you make of this story so far and the reaction to it?
Well, you know, I think it's been kind of along the lines of a lot of these stories that, you know, have to do with race and inequality and police mistreatment of black people in particular. I mean, you know, there's a narrative that gets formed, and once that narrative is formed, it doesn't matter what evidence comes out. People are going to stick to what they believe. And now it's my understanding that that Michael Bennett was in the casino, and that when the police encountered him, he was crouched behind a gaming machine. And when he saw them, he ran, was told to stop and didn't, and then jumped into traffic. You know, that it's an area of the strip where there are no sidewalks, jumped into traffic. And the police that encountered him in the street were told that somebody from the area of a possible shooting had fled. And so, to their understanding, this was a dangerous or potentially dangerous individual that they were encountering that may have fired a weapon. And so it made sense for them to react the way that they did. Now, look, I think most reasonable people in America are for equality and don't want police brutality. But once again, the narrative gets distorted and the story gets exaggerated, and nobody wants to wait until the explanation comes out.
No, there's no waiting. That's not allowed. I think there are a lot of legitimate questions that to be asked of the police. In other words, I mean, because one of the union has come out and sent a letter, the police union, I should say, to Goodell, basically saying, well, you need to investigate the way he handled it and some of the they say lies that he offered up. But in all honesty, one of the things they said in the letter was, look, he's hiding behind a bank machine, like there's something suspicious about that. Now, I don't know about you. I've actually been in a casino in Vegas when somebody has said somebody's got a gun, and everybody is at that point, not knowing what's going on, kind of cowering, kind of trying to hide under tables or around machines, whatever. So I will say it sounds a little specious to hear, well, it looked like he was hiding. Everybody in there was hiding because nobody knew exactly what was going on, and there was some discussion about guns. So I would like a little more detail about, all right, what was it about him that became the object of their interest? Because if it was just that he was hiding, everybody was hiding behind tables and around tables. So I guess my point is, I guess I'm with you to an extent, but I want to see. I'm not denying the possibility that he was profiled. I just need more information. I'd like to learn more about how this thing went and why it went to a point where they got him on the ground and they got a gun to his head.
Well, I mean, there are people that are crouched down, and there are some people that ran initially.
Right.
And I think that according to the police story, now, you know, you can have your doubts about that, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But according to the police story, he didn't run until he saw the police, which is obviously a red flag for police that are in the area of a potential shooting. They see somebody crouched down, and then he sees the police, and he runs. And they tell him to stop, and he doesn't. He saw that it was the police. Why did he run? Why didn't he stop at that point? Why wasn't he running initially from the scene rather than once he saw the police? So, you know, you kind of have to put yourself in the position of a police officer that is responding to this call of a potential shooting, and they see this individual that runs when he sees them and then doesn't stop. So that, to me, is the explanation to that, or at least potential explanation to that. But here's the thing, once again, you know, there are multiple sides to this, but what happens so many times in these situations is once the narrative is out there, it doesn't matter what evidence, it doesn't matter what video gets released, because then it'll be, well, it was about brutality. And look, you know, it's not easy to arrest somebody that doesn't want to be arrested, okay? And I know that he was saying, okay, I didn't do anything. You know, everybody says they didn't do anything. And from the police perspective, they see this large individual that they're trying to control that potentially has a gun on him. And, yeah, I mean, rough language, all that stuff. And I'm not saying that, you know, that police should be able to do whatever they want, but their actions need to be taken in the context of what was going on.
Well, it is true. In some of the video I saw...
Hey, Dan.
Yes.
Dan, can we continue this interview in 30 seconds?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll put you back on hold, and
call
yeah.
me back.
All right, we'll call you back. We'll put you on hold, and Garzy can talk to you. It sounds like there might have been a family crisis, which he predicted might be the case, and so we can call Robert Smith back. Why don't we do that? We're at almost our break time anyway. We'll pause. We'll come back. We'll continue this part of the discussion. Some emailers have come in that are pleased with Robert's statements early. A number of them displeased as well. We'll talk football, given that the NFL season starts tonight and the college football season is already well underway. More with Robert Smith next. Real quick, as we will have Robert Smith rejoin our conversation. During the break, I got an email from a guy named James who writes, Dan, boom. He, meaning Robert, just explained it to you and you still refuse to believe it. Put yourself in the place of the cops for once instead of the liberal media and siding with these idiots that won't listen. Every damn time, and I listen to you daily, every damn time you side with the criminal and not the police, and you wonder why no one has respect for authority when all of you people on the damn radio are constantly siding against the police. You know, I've said this a million times on this show. You're free to disagree with whatever assertion I make or agree with whatever assertion Robert Smith makes, but don't make crap up. Don't lie. Don't misrepresent what I have said over a period of years on this show about narratives. Because we've talked about it long before we even discussed it with Robert Smith. We've talked about that with Ron Rosenbaum. That once a story gets started, it doesn't seem to matter what the investigation leads to. That it's rigged from the beginning, and that therefore whatever you think happened on the front end is what you believe is going to be the case no matter what the investigation shows. Are there times when I think cops go too far? Hell yes. Has it happened in one case here? Yes. Have there been a number of times where I have basically said the same thing Robert Smith just said regarding the issue of, do the facts matter? Can we let the story evolve and develop? Can we get a little bit more information? A ton of times. So James, I would actually prefer you not listen to this show if you're going to lie and misrepresent what I have said on issues such as these over a long period of time. That's what really pisses me off. Disagree all you want, think I'm wrong-headed all you want, but do not make up what my position has been on this issue over a period of the last 5 to 10, however long we've done this show, because that's beyond annoying, as you might tell. Robert is back, Whiting Clinic, LASIK, and Eye Care Hotline. What I was about to say when you got interrupted, maybe by a family issue, was if you watch the video early of the hubbub, there are a number of people who are moving left, right, whatever, and some of them are white and some of them are black. I mean, on the issue of, well, one black man got profiled, there are a lot of people of color who seem to be not grabbed, not in any way, shape, or form, you know, bothered by the police. So for me, I think I need to know more. I want to know more about this story, about where it goes. But there are a number of people who are not detained by the police. The question becomes, again, are they telling the truth, the cops, about why they selected this individual? And let's find out and let's do due diligence. There's supposed to be like a million videos on this thing. And I'm hoping that having all of that, even though the cop did not have his camera on, we will be able to resolve some of the open questions that exist.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember as well that Michael Bennett has been one of the guys that, you know, has kneeled or sat
right
during the anthem, and you know, he considers himself an activist. And look, you know, as black men in America, we are primed to believe that white police in particular do not like us and do not trust us. You know, I've got my own profiling incidents. As a matter of fact, when I was at Ohio State, I think this was my freshman year, I remember that I was sitting outside with some friends, you know, around a bar or something like that. And these two police officers, both white, come up to me, and, you know, they've got a stature like, you know, a bit menacing. And they come up and they start asking me, you know, what my name is, what I'm doing, where I've been, everything like that. And you know, I felt offended immediately. And that's the first place you go as a black man, especially when it's a white officer, and they come up and they accost you. But, you know, I wrote this article about this incident and saying, yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a quote unquote famous athlete, you can still get harassed. And I remember thinking about it for the next couple of weeks. And I wrote another article because I started to think, well, wait a second. You know, they came up to me and they asked me because they said that I fit the description of somebody that had assaulted another student, you know, right before they came up to me. So if they don't know, they don't know who you are and you fit a description, or if you're running from them and you hadn't been running before, as in the case of Michael Bennett, you know, that arouses suspicion, and that's reasonable suspicion. And it doesn't matter if they saw a white guy crouch and that white guy sees the cops and all of a sudden just takes off running and then doesn't respond and then jumps into the street like he's trying to get away, because everybody else is trying to get away, but nobody seems to be that desperate to get away. So that, you know, all of those things together in the context of what's going on and not knowing, you know, apparently there wasn't even a shooting, but not
right
knowing those things, people have to understand what it's like to be a police officer with your life on the line every day, especially when you think there's somebody that may have a gun and may have just used it.
That the position that you're laying out is not a very popular one among, I dare say, black players in the National Football League right now. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and for all of the talk about Colin Kaepernick, you know, hey, Colin Kaepernick, he's just making a peaceful protest for equality. So why would you have a problem with that? Well, first of all, he wore socks that depicted police officers as pigs last summer. And then in his statement, and this is like the only statement that I can recall that he's made about what he was doing, he was saying that black men are being killed, you know, basically with impunity. Now that's simply not true. People may disagree about what the facts of some of these cases have been, but it's not only inflammatory, it's wrong and it's counterproductive. I think, you know, that's the part about this that really bothers me, because like I said, yes, as black men, we are primed to have that suspicion, but we also need to understand the position of police officers trying to do their job, and in the context of them doing their job, they may do things that we find offensive. That's really just part of their job and part of their fear. So it's a difficult situation, and the problem is when people make statements like this, and when the cause, if you will,
right,
it's called, there's no backing away from it, because it seems that activists now believe that if any part of the story collapses, that the entire cause collapses, and that simply can't be the case. No cause is worth sacrificing the truth.
One other item I wanted to get to that I think is a crucial question, you may have more information than I have, I don't know. One of the pieces I saw indicated that, you know, the cop in authority was asked at a news conference, I think this was yesterday, about basically everybody was kind of running. So why him? Why is Bennett the guy that stands out? And the cop's response was, I really can't answer that as yet. That's exactly what we'd like to hear from Mr. Bennett as well. I mean, to me, that is a rather key question. Now, you've indicated it's because he, and I don't know where you, if you read that someplace or where you heard that from in terms of, okay, about what.
I've read that in a couple of places. And here's, you know, when these things happen, and I applaud Las Vegas Police Department for, you know, meeting this thing head on, and obviously they kind of had to do this, but, you know, trying to get to the facts right away. And it's not, once you hold one of these press conferences, there's still so much information
right.
that, you know, even the person giving the press conference hasn't taken in. And that's what I would just caution people, because if that's the case, if he didn't run until he saw the police and look, there are a lot of police officers there seeing a lot of different things, but there was only one person that really aroused the type of suspicion to start this chase. And you can hear, I don't know if you've actually seen the video where they're actually going down the hall. And I think it was part of the Facebook Live broadcast for this press conference. You can hear police officers running down the hall and they're saying, one guy ran. And then that information is relayed to police officers
right.
out front. And their only information is, A, there was a shooting, and B, there's one guy running that has aroused the suspicion of police officers that were sent to the scene. So whatever color that person is irrelevant to the police officers that are getting that information. Now, you could say, well, what started it in the first place? And I think the explanation that I've seen in a couple of places was that, once again, he didn't run until he saw the police. And that's suspicious. I mean, I don't know how else you can describe that, but suspicious.
Stay tuned. We'll see this. I hope this story, I hope we get more information. I hope we get more video, because I don't think you would disagree that there are times where the individual who says he was victimized is embellishing or making stuff up, but there are times when cops conveniently embroider a story as time goes on, too. And I just want to see it play out a little bit more before I'm sure. You'll grant that, I assume.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, this stuff is real. Like,
yeah.
there are problems with police officers in this country, and I don't think anybody in their right mind would deny that. And that, you know, the numbers have shown, counter to what a guy like Colin Kaepernick wants to believe for his cause, that black people are more likely to die at the hands of police than white people, which isn't true based on the number of encounters that they have. But police officers do use force against black men more than white men. And, you know, it's a problem. It's a real problem. But just because it's a real problem, it doesn't give you freedom to exaggerate and to distort the facts of a story to try and further a cause.
Well, that's where we get into, once the story takes off, the details as they are revealed, whether you're talking about a court case or even just talking about prior to that, almost become, for a lot of people, and that is one of my biggest gripes, almost immaterial, that you get locked in, you get dug in, and so the details, and what ends up happening is the details just get dismissed. Well, it's a rigged deal, so we're not really getting the real story, and so in the end, it doesn't even matter what an investigation might reveal. That's the sad part.
You know, And I mean, think about the Trayvon Martin case and Stevie Wonder's protest of Florida. I assume it's still continuing. He said he won't perform in the state of Florida until the Stand Your Ground laws are repealed. And Stand Your Ground had absolutely nothing to do with the case. See, that's how these stories evolve and these narratives evolve, and people head down paths that they shouldn't head down. And the problem is, once again, once the cause has been called, there are too many people that feel that any piece of the story that isn't true, that somehow diminishes the entire case or makes the entire case collapse, and therefore it hurts the cause. And so they so stubbornly cling to the narrative regardless of what information actually comes out.
We have only about a minute left to talk football today. Maybe we'll get into some football next week. Your Vikings open, as you know, against the Saints on Monday Night Football. And you're kind of afar, but we cut our left guard this week. We're moving pieces around along the offensive line. You have expressed to me for years how important you know an offensive line is to whatever a quarterback and or running back and or really wide receivers are capable of doing or even having a chance to do. Are you a little worried? I mean, because the whole offseason was about fixing that unit, and we're still moving pieces around at the start of the season trying to figure out whether we can actually build a unit. I mean, that does that make you nervous as a Vikings guy?
Yeah, a little bit uncomfortable, but you know, it also means that they are looking for the best piece, and hopefully it's not a case of, you know, this guy was awful. It was this guy can't get us there, and that's what you think about as a coach, as you're trying to put the best five on the field at offensive line. Sometimes you think, okay, well, this guy can't handle this part of it, so we really need to make that change. But it would be a shame, you know, we saw it last year with the guys getting hurt and people being brought in off the street, that, you know, it doesn't matter how many beautiful, shiny pieces you have at the skilled positions. If you can't get it straight up front, there's going to be problems.
Thank you, sir. We'll chat next week. Appreciate it, Robert, as always.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks, man. Robert Smith checking in. Sounds like he had all kinds of stuff going on in the background as well. We're out at 6 today, which means we're going to have to sort of morph right into one of Garvey's favorite segments.
It's the Bumper to Bumper Show Wrap.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Prism Clinical Research.
Not to be confused with the Bumper to Bumper Dr. Dan's Inbox, which is also brought to you by Prism Clinical Research.
Do they want to just sponsor the whole show? I'm sure we could do. Is there any such thing as like a show sponsorship?
Kind of.
Oh, we already have those kind of?
Not really.
But we can build new ones, I think.
Yes, we've built a lot.
I can't even begin to get to all the emails Robert Smith related. There are a number of people very unhappy with Mr. Smith. There are many very willing to applaud his position. So stay tuned on that. We'll try to get back to that tomorrow, if at all possible. Also about tomorrow, before we get to the show wrap, Dylan O'Brien is going to join us in studio. We're looking forward to that visit. American Assassin, the red carpet screening is tomorrow in the Twin Cities, and he's coming in for that. So he's going to join us in studio, the guy who plays Mitch Rapp in the motion picture. Brian Billick will be with us to talk football. Lavelle E. Neal will be with us to talk baseball and your Minnesota Twins, who are at least for the moment playoff bound. Everything available on the free. Everybody wants something for free. iHeartRadio app. We're out at in about 5 minutes because Vikings country is back in session because the season's about to begin. They will be. It's going to be must with Jeremiah Searle. Speaking of the offensive line, at a place called Junction 70 in Cottage Grove. If you'd like to join them, I'm sure they would much appreciate that. We had Kyle Mills in studio. The author of basically the guy who's been given stewardship over the Mitch Rapp series after the untimely passing of our good friend Vince Flynn. He is in town to hawk his new book at, I guess, the Once Upon a Crime bookstore tonight if you want to come and see him. Enemy of the State is the new book that came out on Tuesday. Highly recommended. He joined right about 3:30 or so. We had Dr. Dan's inbox at 4:30. Some very good football-related items from a number of folks. And as I mentioned, Robert Smith, more on the Bennett story than football specifically. At about he joined us about 5:15 today. We had a Portillo's update to get to. And was there anything else? Yeah, I guess we talked a little bit about football participation at the amateur level and high school level and so forth is way up if you got an SEC school nearby. And down almost anywhere else in the country, which maybe says something about SEC strength or about the weakness of football elsewhere. I don't know. But interesting statistics there as well. And the mystery. Will it be revealed soon? Why is Tyrone Carter done with the Golden Gopher football program and PJ Fleck? He continues to say he's done with them, but he has not gotten very specific about what exactly the grievance is. Will he ever? all of that kind of interesting, I think, and available to you. Thursday Night Football. The season opens on the Fan tonight on our flagship at 7:30, KC at New England. That's how we started the show. Basically, we saluted, much to the chagrin of many,
yes,
the New England Patriots as a team that even if you hate them, you got to respect what they've been able to do. And the fact that they've been able to do it in a very unconventional way should actually be interesting to the people who say pro football is too stodgy, because there's nothing stodgy about the way they stay on top, leaving the cheating aside for the moment. Even in terms, yes, of the way they game plan from week to week and even the way they put together their rosters.
And they won 5 Super Bowls, so like even, yeah, if they cheated for 2 of them, it's, yeah, still 3.
That's
on
still
their
pretty
own,
good run.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Which is more than most.
We got college football Saturday. We got a triple header NFL related on Sunday because of the Vikings Monday night
game. It is. There
and
is.
Ben Lieber is on the radio analysis of the first game of the day, Pittsburgh at Cleveland.
Steelers Browns, right?
Yeah.
He was preparing in the office right next to you.
Yeah, it's special.
May I shamelessly plug something,
yes,
on Gophers on Demand?
Why not?
It is the very first episode of the KFAN College Football Podcast. KFAN College Football Podcast with me and former Gophers coach, athletic director, administration, everything, Dan O'Brien. We did it earlier today. We're going to do it weekly. A lot of Gopher stuff, a lot of Big Ten stuff, a lot of moving the team from point A to point B talk, which I thought was interesting. But that's Gophers on Demand, iHeartRadio app. I just tweeted it out, too, if people are interested. About a half an hour. Won't kill you.
No, it won't hurt you at all. Look forward to that.
The game appears to be on, by the way, Gophers Oregon State.
Despite the brush fires and the wildfires. Okay.
At kick, according to them.
Okay.
They could be throwing us off the track, but that's what they say.
Safe travels to you tomorrow out west. I mentioned Dylan O'Brien, I mentioned Billick and Lovell, and we hope the picks. We plan on doing the picks, right? Whether Gerbschmidt's involved, whether Dan from Woodbury's involved.
I have the three
I'm
games
doing the
for
picks.
You already
picked the games, too?
I've got the games for you, so
even
we should
better.
Be ready to go.
Outstanding. I'll save some of the good emails that have come in today regarding our Robert Smith discussion, because as he always does on the issue of race, he has elicited lots of interesting responses. Not all to the in the affirmative, but nevertheless, eye-opening for sure. Enjoy the rest of the afternoon and evening. Prepare for Muss's big interview with Jeremiah Searles on Vikings Country. And we will talk tomorrow beginning at 3 o'clock right here on The Fan.
Go get him, Dylan. You know, show us what you can do.
And that's a fact.
O'Brien, classy and gracious in defeat.
Whenever you call. Well, go Twins. Thank you for the airtime, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for the memories. Thank you for the great time. We love you, Dan.